Well, good morning. It's just still morning and we'll get underway. I'm Lindsay Smart from Munich Re and chairing this session. We're having an update on the Singapore Insured Lives Mortality Study, and it's my pleasure to introduce Andrew Linfoot, who will be taking us through the session. I'll tell you a little bit about Andrew just in a moment, but some housekeeping first of all. Andrew's got some slides and will present for a time, perhaps about half the time or a little bit more. And I think if you can save questions till the end is probably best. But the quality of the discussion that we have after the presentation and the formal slides really depends on you. And I'll remind you about the feedback forms that I'm sure you're quite used to filling them in. And Leslie down the back is going to collect those feedback forms. And Julia Purvis from the Institute tells me that we are not to fold the forms. Mea culpa, I've been doing that, but apparently the scanning is easier if we keep the forms unfolded. And so just remember, when you come to fill out the part about the quality of the discussion, that's over to you, and that depends on your questions and feedback. And I'm sure Andrew is actually very keen to try and get some questions and feedback from you this morning to help him with his work. So now just a few notes about Andrew. Actuary since 1995, been in reinsurance most of the time since, and I think I first met you when you started off in reinsurance back in 96, and most of that time Andrew has lived in Singapore, not all the time but most of it. He's currently Principal Officer of Pacific Life Re, Singapore branch, and he's also a past President of the Singapore Actuarial Society, currently active on the Members Education Committee of the Society in Singapore. He's our Institute's ambassador to Singapore and also on the International Actuarial Association's Asia Committee. So now to the interesting stuff. He's a former professional quizmaster, and so you might just want to make a note of that, because if we don't get questions from you, then perhaps Andrew might start firing questions at you. He's a recreational muso, golfer, cricketer, and pistol shooter. So interesting. And father of three. So without further ado, I'll hand over to Andrew. Thanks.
Thanks, Lindsay. Yes, the pistol shooting is a fairly recent exploit, and it follows my CIRA qualification recently. It wasn't undertaken as a risk mitigant for our longevity business, although it turns out I'm quite a good shot, albeit from about 3 metres. But I'm not going to give up my day job, that's for sure. Lindsay mentioned that this is an update. Let me give you some background on that. There's a joint working group in Singapore from the Monetary Authority, the MAS, and the Actuarial Society. I'm a member of that work group, and the work hasn't been finished yet. I had planned to present a summary of the paper for that report, which isn't ready. So what I've got instead is an unpublished series of slides, so you won't find them on the website, I'm afraid. But there are a number of interesting points that come out of that, and I'm really keen to get some feedback on those, to get some discussion going, because this is the first time that I've been involved in this work in Singapore and a graduation as well. I'm very interested to hear some of the contribution that those of you might make. And in particular, I liked the study published or announced yesterday from Australia, and I'm pleased that you managed to get here. And there are a couple of parallels that I managed to quickly scribble down in yesterday's session. So one other thing, this is a practitioner's talk. This isn't a very technical talk. This doesn't have any formulae in the slides. So if that's what you're after, you'd better go to the Bayesian mortality modelling run by Mike Sherris, because this is more practical-oriented. It's really aimed at people who have an interest in Asia, not just Singapore, but Asia more generally, or have an interest in mortality or morbidity. And hopefully I'm going to give you some new insights there, but I really hope that I can learn something from you as well. The other objective I did have was to more generally give a bit more information about the activities of the actuarial profession in Asia, in Singapore, and the role that Australians are taking there. Because it is very deep, it is rich, it could use more, of course, and there are lots of opportunities. So if people are interested in knowing more about that, I'm very happy to talk. Okay, so a number of discussion points. I've talked about the objectives already, a little bit about the background and the status. But then some of the key features, I'll summarise the data as is the norm. Talk a bit about the method that we adopted for the graduation. I'll run through the early results of that. There's some TPD experience. One of the really interesting points is to do with making adjustment to the death experience for the TPDs, and I'd like to talk through that. We've done a look at the linked graduation as well, the linked policies and their results, and compared those. And then finally, a comparison with a number of different territories across Asia-Pac, so we can see how they compare. All right. Okay, pictures tell thousands of words, so I'll try and explain some of the words that this one should be telling you. This is simply a picture of the exposure for males. All together, I think we had 7.6 million years of exposure for male deaths, 7.7 for females are next, 8.3 million for TPD. So why is TPD higher? Well, nearly every life policy in Singapore has a TPD rider included. Nearly every single policy. But 8.3 is bigger than 7.6. So the extras come from CI policies, which include TPD as one of the benefits. So in our, we did collect CI experience as well, but I haven't been able to include CI analysis in this paper. So there is a large amount of TPD data for both males and females. Let's see if this works. Okay, not looking good. All right, never mind. The other two columns, the green and the purple, are the linked experience. I should differentiate there. The blue and the red are what we've called traditional lives, traditional policies, so whole of life and endowment policies for non-linked products. The traditional products tend to be whole of life and endowments as well, but sold through a linked platform, investment-linked platform. So it excludes term life. Females, same scale, so females are slightly higher, particularly at the sort of 30 to 50-year age range, a bit lower in the early ages. And overall, I think it's about the same amount of exposure. Deaths, I think we had a bit over 8,000 male death claims and 1,400 for TPD. Obviously, the majority of those are in the whole of life and endowment space. Females, as well, as you'd expect, slightly lower amounts of deaths, I think 5,000 and 1,000 TPD claims. Okay, so the first sort of interesting analysis that we got out of it was looking at the selection period. Most of the studies that I've looked at across Asia, and including Australia, seem to adopt a two-year select period. Seems pretty common. You know, the US studies seem to go have much longer select periods. I always wondered why. Unfortunately, the data that was provided to our work group, maybe I should wind back a little bit there. The MAS, the Monetary Authority, collects the data from all the insurance companies, and for privacy reasons, they aggregate it and don't provide the seriatim data to the work group, but simply provide the claims output. So there's very few factors that we've got that we can actually analyze the data by, which has been a major limitation for the work group. As part of that, we've only got durations individually for 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, and then 5 plus. So even if we wanted to look longer than a 5-year select period, we couldn't. But then if we take the males, so this is medical lives and non-medical lives all rolled in together, we see that kind of shape. So not unusual, I think fairly similar to the Australian experience. Those two percentages in there show the 2+ experience as a percentage of 5+. So the red represents the previous study, 9702, and the blue, 98%, is 0408. So, yeah, okay, we felt that was probably okay, 2-year select period. I'm not sure why it goes down a little bit thereafter, but then obviously it must come back up again.
So, sorry, Andy, can I go on?
Thank you for pointing that out. I think that's on my list of things to say, and I've neglected that. It is by record count. One of the other things we didn't get was by amounts. It was also Singapore resident lives, not Singapore nationals. And Singapore has a large proportion of non-resident population, expatriates and other people working there. And we haven't made any adjustments for multiple lives. So there could be a little bit of bias, more so in the volatility than in the actual level, but potentially there could be errors in the actual levels as well. I'll get on to another point that we've got with a problem with juveniles. But yeah, by policy count. The female picture is not quite as pleasant. So we get a very early selection discount, but then obviously a longer grading up to ultimate. And if we do the same, look at the same percentages, you probably can't quite see the green there. The green, a level of 91%, so the 2+ as a percentage of 5+ is only 91%. So that suggests a 2-year select period is probably going to understate mortality quite significantly for us. I'm not sure if you found anything like that in the Australian study. So one issue. The other sort of related issue was we were able to split this by medically underwritten lives and non-medical lives. Now, I think the scale on there has changed a little bit. So take note of where the 100% line lies, just in there. So it would appear that Singapore underwriters aren't doing a very good job. It's a declining proportion of policies that are sold with medical underwriting. It's around about 10%, but declining. And, I mean, one would have to conclude there's a large degree of anti-selection going on for those larger policies, and that's not being picked up by underwriting other than in the first year, for the first duration. Now, I think I noted in the Australian results, you had a similar issue, but for the by count, not by sum assured, which suggests it was for non-medical rather than for medical lives. So we've seemed to have the opposite thing going on here, because there's the non-medical picture, a nice, you know, steady slope upwards. So that was something that's kind of confounding us a bit at the moment. Right, where am I up to? One other point. This is for lives aged 30 and onwards only. We've had a bit of a data problem with the juvenile experience. One or two of the companies just completely stuffed that up. So later on when you see the graduation, I'll tell you please ignore anything under age 30. So we've tried to adjust for that here. Pleasingly, from five plus onwards, the medical and the non-medical have about the same level of mortality, within 1 or 2 percentage points each. So at least they converge at some point. But if anyone's got ideas about that funny shape in between, other than what the obvious ones are, then I'd very much like to hear them. Okay. So the graduation results. We ended up using a Whittaker-Henderson method. I tried using a Heligman-Pollard approach, a modified Heligman pilot approach that has about 12 parameters. If, I don't know if anyone's familiar with it, but Heligman pilot is nice in that it takes three different curves over the main age range and then tries to say that they are fundamentally underlying appropriate levels of shapes of mortality. And that was looking good for a little while, but unfortunately our data just wouldn't converge with that very well at all. And it's really, really hard to fit too because of so many parameters. I have a piece of software that has a go at it, but it just wasn't working very well. So Whittaker-Henderson is a bit more of a statistically driven approach that doesn't assume pre-assume a shape. So you can see there that the dark blue line, and again, please ignore this part. The dark blue line is the curve that's been fitted to the crude rates, the light blue line, and then the dotted red line over the top is the population mortality for males for about the midpoint of the study. Obviously, we've got a log scale on the side so that I could show you the whole age range. A couple of notable features. There's a big drop at age 30 that looks kind of significant, and it's a bit significant, but the amount of data there is quite low. More interestingly, at age 52, there's this really weird result. It doesn't really stand out there because I haven't got any confidence intervals around that. But 52-year-old males, if you're in Singapore when you're 52, I think it's a good time to get out. There seems to be something going on there. There were about 90 out of 300 claims expected by the graduated rate. There were about 90 more, and that's several standard deviations away from the mean, and just not been able to find any explanation for that. It's possibly a data problem, although it persists across each year of the investigation. It persists across most of the durations. And believe it or not, I even found evidence of it in the prior investigation. The best explanation I got from a professor of finance was that with Singapore being a blend of Western and Eastern cultures, 13 being unlucky in the West and 4 being unlucky in the East, 4 times 13, obviously, being 52, might suggest that that's the time to get out. But apart from that, I can't find any good reason for it. The other kind of... there's a bit of a wavy line going on there. I don't... perhaps that could be related to approaching retirement age. It's hard to say. It is significant. The confidence intervals around that point are actually quite tight because of the large amount of data. And then in the sort of above age 70, clearly there are far fewer claims. And we've chosen to simply blend that into the population, to reach the population curve at age 99. If you were just drawing a line through it by eyesight, you maybe wouldn't do that. But we couldn't really think of any good reason why insured discounts should persist into the very old ages. Okay. This chart simply shows the proposed graduated rates again compared to the previous investigation in light blue. And the kind of wavy dotted line is the right-hand axis, which is showing the percentage difference. I should say that this is a death and TPD table. It's not a death-only table. The previous investigation was apparently a death-only investigation. I'll come to more detail on that shortly. So you see there's quite a difference, but I think the it's hard to say that that's really significant because the previous investigation used, I think, about eight different methods over the whole male curve. So I think some of those have produced some of the peaks and troughs in theirs that happened to correspond with one of the troughs in ours. Overall, it looks like about a 17% improvement from the previous investigation to the current one. But again, that's comparing with death only to death and TPD. Nevertheless, on asking, interrogating the previous mortality committee, they were sure that it was death only, although one of the contributors subsequently told us that they had actually classified TPD claims as death claims in the previous study. So it's sort of maybe death and some TPD in the previous investigation. So that's one of the challenges that we've had to face. Now, how are we going to produce a death-only table is a bit of a question. We'll come to that. First, let's look at females. A fairly similar set of results, but the sort of dip at around, I think it's 55 to 75, is even more pronounced. And that's not in the population curve, but... Yeah, if you look along the population line, it's nearly straight. And I think I looked into their study, and they used some methods which seemed to assume nearly an exponential growth in those mortality rates. So it's not all that surprising that they didn't include that shape. Perhaps this has something to do with retirement ages. Maybe the older age females enjoy their sort of 50s and 60s until their husbands retire, and then they come home and their mortality starts going up again. I'm not sure. But maybe that's a good time for Singaporean females to leave as well. Similar approach we've taken to blend into the population rates at 99. So over the range 30 to 75, that was a decrease from the previous study of about 20-odd percent. And then from 80 onwards, it's about 10%. But that's fairly artificial because of the blending that we've done. Okay, and there's the same comparison. Oh, okay, sorry, those percentages I mentioned are of the current compared to the previous study. You can see that same dip in the previous study in the dotted line. Again, any thoughts or explanations... gratefully appreciated. Right, so since we've got all this TPD data, we thought we'd better analyse that. And I've conveniently grouped them into 10-year age bands, with the axis along the bottom showing the midpoint of those age bands. We didn't have a previous study to compare it with, so we've compared them as a percentage of the death and TPD mortality experience. And quite pleasingly, it sort of averages out at 14.5% from age 25 to 65. It's about 14.5% of the total. I say that's convenient because as a reinsurer, we always price on 15% of the total, so that's nice to see. That might be quite a bit lower than you'd see in Australia, I'm not sure, but I'd expect it would be lower because of the definition that's adopted. Historically, Singapore has, or a lot of Asia has used what's maybe impolitely referred to as the vegetable definition, and more recently it's moved to a more of an occupational-related definition, but the inability to do any job, really. So it is quite a severe test. After age 65, you can see it drops off quite substantially, and presumably that's because most policies will have that rider ceasing at age 65 and there's not much exposure thereafter either. But there is still the benefit under CI policies, so that's why it seems to kick in a bit later on. But I would caution that the data there are very sparse. I think there's only about 4% of the claims exist after 65. Okay. Female results even more uniform. That was a nice picture. Again, almost about 15%. So we're quite pleased with that one. And then, in order to come up with a pure mortality table, we didn't have the luxury of having death-only policies to analyse. So what we've tried to do, and I have to say we haven't spent as much time on this as we probably should, reflecting the fact that we all have day jobs, but we've tried to say, well, of the policies that are extinguished because of a TPD claim, had they not been extinguished, how many would have gone on to become a death claim? So, okay, then we need some impaired life, impaired mortality assumptions, which we didn't have. And we managed to find a staple in paper from 98. Some of you may recall it was a long-term care paper written by Dulloway and Elliott, who kindly included some impaired life mortality tables in their appendix. So purely as a starting point to try and see what it would look like if we took those impaired life, impaired mortality rates, applied those to the TPD claims and exposed them to 2.5 years, so half the length of the study, and then add those claims back in as death claims and add the exposure back in as exposure and see what difference that might make, and does that come up with a sensible looking answer. So this is probably the most contentious or the most unusual part of the study, and the one where I'd be most interested in discussion if anybody else has seen other methods or have their own thoughts on what we could have done better. This chart shows what the loading we came up with for on an unsmoothed and on a smoothed basis. So it tends to be below 2% up to age 40, and it peaks at around 9% before tapering off again. Clearly lots of criticisms could be made of this method. The impaired mortality basis was based on 3 of 6 ADLs, which isn't consistent at all with the TPD definition in Singapore. But as a starting point, we thought it was better than nothing. Okay. Similar thing for females, and quite a similar result. And so then we end up with a graduated death-only rate for males. And you can, if you remember the previous one, that black line just slightly lower, so slightly bigger discount. Again, forget the under-30s. That's all rubbish. Have I got some overall percentages here? No. And then females as well. Sorry, slightly higher. The black line slightly higher, not slightly lower. Sorry, slightly lower, not slightly higher. So in percentage terms, how does that translate as an annual improvement? Well, what I've done here, that may look a bit confusing. 3 columns, 4 studies to compare. So the 83-88, the 88-93. Then these are all percentages to and from the 97-02, so the study before the current one. So the right-hand 2 columns represent improvements from those dates going up to 97-02, and the leftmost column is the improvements from 97-02 since. And you see what we regard as somewhat alarmingly high numbers. It looks like between about 4 and 6.5% per annum improvements over that period, which is rather large. However, if you look back to the previous period, so if you go from 83-88 to 97-02, that's even still 3 to 5%. So it's probably high in a developed world context, but over that period from the 80s, Singapore and its society has gone through massive modernization and development. So that bit I can accept. The more recent column I think looks a bit too optimistic. So comparing it with population improvements over the period, again, if you look at the prior period to the 88-93 to 97-02, the insured improvements were on average, about the same as the population improvements. However, the more recent period, the insured improvements seem to be 2.5% higher and quite consistently over the age range as well. So something going on there, it seems. This could be as a result of those TPD claims having been included in the previous study. I'm hoping that's the answer. Females, somewhat similar picture. But still, I mean, there's 5.6% improvement from 83, 88 to 97, 02. There have been some really massive improvements. This doesn't look good for the annuity providers, obviously. Fortunately, there aren't too many of them. But again, the females still look very high. Not quite as high in absolute terms over population as the males were, though. All right. So linked experience, far fewer claims, of course, but enough to get some sense. We're not going to produce a graduated table, but, well, I don't think we are anyway. But it's interesting to compare the experience with the death only. And so if you look at the black line is the linked. No, death, yeah, black line is the linked, and the blue dotted line is the non-linked. So you can see that up to about age 60, the linked experience is higher than the traditional. But then from 60 onwards, it reverses. We thought perhaps it's that there is... What was our good reasoning? Maybe some socioeconomic drivers. The people who can still afford to have investments in their retirement, perhaps they come from higher socioeconomic groups, so perhaps their experience is better than the average. For those up to retirement, they could well be many smaller sized policies, probably less underwriting, although that isn't consistent with the earlier medical experience that we found, where the non-medical actually seemed to have better early experience than the underwritten lives. So a bit hard to judge that one. And again, perhaps also questionable whether it's significant given the volume of claims. Female experience, quite similar. Perhaps not quite as dramatic, though. All right, my last slide is maybe the most interesting. I've expressed a number of different territories, five there, as a percentage of the last published Australian table, I95-97. And the darkish blue line at the bottom there is Singapore. This one. Over a lot of that range from sort of from 60 onwards, it's about 70% of. I think over the total range on average, it was 60-something. And interestingly, if I compared that, if I got my scribbles right yesterday, I think Australian males, 0409, was 62% of 95-97.
That's non-smokers only.
It is. Yeah, I thought it was too low. Singapore does have a pretty low smoking rate. Even males, it's probably, I think it's under 20% smoking prevalence. Females is even under 5%, although walking past the banks at lunchtime doesn't seem like it. But yeah, so my first reaction was, well, that's just not right. And comparing with some of the other more developed economies in Asia suggested that it might also be a bit optimistic. If you look at Hong Kong, 0206, that's the red line, that's quite a bit higher than Singapore. However, Hong Kong does have an influence from mainland China. A lot of lives buy their policies in Hong Kong, and their experience is typically quite a bit higher. The UK, the last UK study was 2000, so that's the sort of mid light blue line. So 10 years of improvement. It would come down quite a bit, and the UK is a lot more diverse, I think, than the Singapore lives. You'll remember Singapore is a city state, 4 million people. Nobody's more than 10 minutes away from a hospital. It's very clean, very efficient. Healthcare is very high, and there's a great standard of public healthcare. I think you can stay in a shared ward for about $5 a day. And, you know, it has developed massively over the last 30 years and the last 15 years that I've been there. So, we're not too worried, and I was pleased that your results were not too far away from that. But as you point out, that was non-smokers only. Korea is the green one. That's quite notable for how high it is, near double at age 40. Korean men are terrible drivers. I've got to say that. Although they have been getting better, and you can see in the later years it's improved quite a lot. So I'm reluctant to rely on that comparison. The other one I've got there is Malaysia, which is also very high. I think the ethnic influences in Malaysia are quite different. There's a much higher proportion of Malay lives who typically have a quite higher mortality level than the Chinese, ethnic Chinese. The one that you might wonder why I didn't put there is Japan. If I was looking for a place that had very good mortality to justify the Singapore results, well, I did put it on there. And I took it off again because it was far higher than I expected. But that's quite interesting because Japan is one place where the insured mortality seems to be quite a bit higher than population. I hadn't really thought about that too much despite having business in Japan. Not too much mortality business, fortunately. But Japan's level of underwriting medical assessment limits are way high. So the vast majority of Japanese lives don't get underwritten or get underwritten very, very, very softly. And even many, many cases are just accepted at standard because they're culturally they seem to see it as a bit more of a community rating philosophy where we'll just take everybody in and share the costs among ourselves. So while Japanese population mortality is apparently very good. Well, I've got another story about that. The insured lives mortality isn't nearly as good, so therefore it wasn't a very good, very helpful benchmark for me. The other point that's interesting to note was I read in the New York Times, I think it was either early this year or late last year, a story about the oldest living Japanese lady who had died, and I don't know, she was 115 or something. So the authorities went to the next oldest living Japanese on record to present her with the certificate. And turns out she had died many years ago. So they went to the next one, also dead. The next one, also dead. But people had their family had kept collecting the pension checks. And I guess if there was enough of that, then perhaps Japanese population mortality isn't quite as good as we think it is. I'm not really sure. Subject for another study, perhaps. But maybe, you know, they do smoke a lot and quite a lot of stress in their lives. But again, they're obviously a very well-developed society and good, great medical care. So, females. That's my last slide. Similar result, not nearly as dramatic. Korean females, in particular, are quite a lot closer to Singaporean females. In the older ages. But again, that's a bit more influenced by our shaping up to the population rates. Okay, well, that's actually the end of the formal part. So I think we've got about half an hour before.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Andrew. I think maybe 20 minutes or so. Anyway, we'll get the bell with about 5 minutes to go, and lunch is straight afterwards. That was a very informative presentation. Thanks, Andrew. And Now it's over to you to ask some questions. I certainly found it quite interesting. I'm not disclosing how old I am, but I've concluded that I'm not spending any significant time in Singapore anytime soon. So just a reminder that please use the microphones because these sessions are being taped, and state your name first. So who's going to ask the first question? Or a comment? Thought it might be you, Rylan.
Hi, Rylan Cummings, KPMG. I've got lots of comments, but I'll just mention a few so that other people have a chance. Firstly, the 60% level, I must admit, even with your comments about Singapore's good medical, etc., that does seem to be very low. Australia's is 60% for non-smokers. Mm. We've got roughly 15% smokers as well. All right. That brings our aggregate rate to 73%. So 60% compared to 73% seems like a huge difference to me. The other thing I wanted to... you mentioned at the start the select period for the US. The US has a very long select period because they have a level premium structure, which we don't have in Australia. So I was interested... I'm not familiar with the Singapore market. You mentioned the sort of whole-of-life policies, whether they are level premium policies, and thus you should be expecting the longer select period than we're seeing in Australia. And the final thing, which I thought you might like to talk about, is... what confidence do you have in the underlying quality of your data? What checks have been done on it? Because you sort of get it in that aggregate form. Because some of the sort of anomalies that you've been talking about in the graphs and in the results, when we get that sort of anomaly, we can generally trace it back to a single company has done something odd because we have the luxury of getting the data from the individual companies.
Yep. Okay, thanks for those, Berlin. Yeah, look, it's hard to be confident in that result, given what my answer is going to be to the third question. it's seeing the improvements that you've had here and the more recent experience is still somewhat reassuring that we're not that far out. It could be that the adjustment for TPD claims we've made isn't sufficient. So for deaths due to TPD claims. I noticed in the Australian study you looked at mortality of riders separately, mortality of products with riders separately. So maybe that's an area that could be a more direct comparison. That would be interesting to do. But again, I'm not sure if how much of yours is going to be published and available for non-contributors. You don't need to comment on that if you don't want to.
No. It's got a 3-year
embargo
period.
Okay, well, we look forward to that being up. Level premiums, that's a good point. With those term life and whole of life and endowments, they do tend to be level, although I think people are often sold them on the basis that after a few years they can stop paying it because the paid-up value is high enough, the surrender value is high enough to make it paid up. But that could be a good reason why we do need to look into a longer select period. We have managed to trace some of the anomalies. So I mentioned that the juvenile experience was just wrong, and it did get traced back. Unfortunately, it's a turgid process we have for that. The MAS members on the work group have day jobs as well, and they have... Well, I'm not sure if their motivation is lower than ours, but they seem to take a lot longer to come back to us. So... I think we raised this juvenile issue in January, and it wasn't until late March that they said, oh, there is a problem. And that's just really annoying. The age 52 male issue, obviously we tried to trace that back as well. And all they managed to do is show me rates by each of the major companies. There are four or five major companies that cover 90% of the experience. And there was no obvious error in any of those one company, any of those single companies, so that remains a puzzle. we've hypothesised a lot about that, whether something in the products or expiry dates of products that might be causing it. Just can't find that one. So, yeah, data issues are a big problem, and I think one of the outcomes from our study is going to be a very strong recommendation that we don't do it this way anymore. I think we just have to have the raw data at our disposal, and we've got to find a better way around that, whether it's using university researchers as more independent people for whom maybe the mortality committee can operate more like an advisory board and the university does the work. Obviously, that's a bit harder because it requires individual companies to sign up to that, whereas at the moment the information is extracted from the MAS's statutory filings and sort of then all jumbled together. So, yeah, it's always a struggle. But, I mean, I think however you get data, it's always going to be data issues that have to be dealt with. But thanks for the comments.
Hi, Aravind Srinivas from Suncorp Life. I just got a couple of comments, really. I was very surprised that your medically underwritten lives have such poor experience. So first question was, what are your underwriting limits? Because they're quite high in Australia. Mm. And I suspect the select period in the US could also be because of the lower underwriting limits there. So just you have to jump through a lot of hoops. The other question was about comment was about the impaired life mortality rates. Just wondering if you have buyback in Singapore built in, because then potentially you could look at that experience really to get your impaired life mortality.
Right.
Then the third question was about the mortality improvements. It just wasn't clear from the presentation whether that was death and TPD improvements or whether just death
right.
only.
Yeah, they were death only, sorry.
Okay, yeah, so that was it.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, good question. The underwriting limits are a lot lower, and I can't cite the numbers myself. And I think we find that Singaporean life insurance underwriters are very conservative, and it's the bane of being a reinsurer in Singapore, to be honest, because if you do large amounts of business with local companies, you end up having to have your own underwriting team just dedicated to doing that customer's business. I think one of my competitors had, through the 90s, I think they had five or six underwriters totally doing underwriting for one treaty that they had in Singapore. Now, I mean, our business model isn't in that space, so we try not to get into that. We don't want to be an outsourced underwriter for the life insurers. But that doesn't help explain the issue. They don't have very high limits. I don't think they're very aggressive. So we're just not really finding a good way to explain that. Maybe I'll talk to some of the other reinsurers and accuse them of being far too cavalier in their underwriting decisions. I think there could be a lot of those sort of, you know, business case marketing reasons that are being adopted. When we do our audits for other companies, we certainly find where they're going outside the processes that they've told us that they follow, and they make these so-called commercial decisions. So maybe that's a factor. Buybacks for TPD is a good question. I'd be surprised if that existed, but I'm not aware of it. A good point to look at, though. Kind of related to that, in Korea just recently, I think the regulator there announced that all riders which presently extinguish a base policy, so of which there are many, CI riders, TPD and other cancer products, all of those are now illegal. They need to continue the policy. Now, so I think that only applied for new business, but it meant that, I mean, they do this in Korea from time to time. They make a sweeping rules like that that always apply at the start of the financial year. So if you're trying to do any business there, you just can't go and talk to people around 1st of April because they're all busy repricing all of their products. And, yeah, they're struggling with that same issue. They don't have that sort of impaired mortality data, and in particular by different reasons. So all of those policies now have to become additional benefits on top of the base rider. It's quite a strain. Hopefully that It's not a very, not a great answer, but thanks.
Another comment or question?
Jenny Gibson from AIA. With the good experience for the non-medically underwritten lives, is it? It could be because you've got guaranteed issue policies over there, so there's a PEC clause for the first 12 months or 2 years?
There has been a lot of push into guaranteed issue, but maybe it depends what you mean by guarantee, maybe simplified issue policies. And it could be that the methods that they're using are quite effective. I know we've done a lot, not so much in Singapore, but we've done a lot of direct marketed products, and they're very carefully designed to try and use the channel to target a group of policyholders that aren't going to be as susceptible to anti-select. And for our own reinsured portfolio, we generally see that. We're not getting high claims in the first couple of years. So even when we're selling cancer policies in particular or other bundled accident and health products, simple, you know, three questions sold over the phone. It's a very effective way of underwriting. So maybe through the bank channel, that's a good way of issuing those. And maybe it's just that the people who go and buy larger policies know they are not well, and that's why they want to buy the policy. I can't really think of many other reasons. And maybe that we saw in that duration zero that there is some selection. Oops, wrong way. That was right back at the start, wasn't it? Yeah, for medical. So duration zero was still a discount over ultimate. So it seems to be that we're screening out the really bad stuff in the first year, but not catching the things that then apply over the next 2 to 4 years. But it's just really interesting that it's kind of the opposite to what Briallen reported yesterday with the non-medical experience. But maybe that's a channel. Maybe that's a channel difference. And you've got much higher medical limits, haven't you? Yeah. Okay. We might have time for one more. Yes, Mr. Seabury.
Thanks, Luke. Yep.
Very simple question for you, Luke Seabury here. When will the report be ready?
Good question. Thank you for asking. It'll be ready when it's ready. I think what we're aiming at, and I'll give a plug here for the East Asian Actuarial Conference coming up in October in Kuala Lumpur. It's the premier gathering of actuaries in Asia. And I would expect that we have a finalised report, if not immediately prior, sometime prior to that, and that we can give a proper session with more published information. So when it is out, you can look on the Singapore Actuarial website. It will be there in all its glory, no embargo period, and free for all.
Andrew, just maybe a follow-up to that question, and I think that was a five-minute bell, so we do have a couple more minutes, and perhaps just a reminder also about the feedback forms. You can be filling those in. But what do you expect to be the impact in the market and commercially on the release of this table? Will companies adopt it straight away, and will we see it translating into prices or values of businesses?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think we'll see an immediate change in pricing because everyone is pricing at a much lower rate than the old table anyway. And indeed, at around 60% of the old table, which is not too dissimilar to what these results are coming out at. The bigger impact, though, may be in... this medical result should have an impact on how underwriters go about their craft. If I was an underwriter, I'd be wanting to see how I could improve that if I believed it. But I think the other main purpose for this is for the Monetary Authority to reset the statutory table that's in the regulations for best estimate mortality. The previous studies table was adopted and sits there in the regulations. And I expect that they are expecting that the final graduated table that comes out of here will be something that they can then shove straight in as the valuation basis. So that's one reason why we have to make sure we get it right, because if it ends up having that statutory role, that's quite significant. But yeah, I don't think there'll be a big change in prices otherwise. I mean, that might change some of the reserving levels, and that might have a small effect, say, on term life, on all the long-term policies, yeah.
Any final comments? So if not, then just let me say thanks for the discussion, and please join with me in thanking Andrew. Just have a small gift here for you. Thanks very much for the presentation. Great. Andrew.
Thanks for your input too.